the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 4341790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought in association with the good friends at ASAP Work Rum, the best shot of the day.
Yes, it feels white rum. If anybody feels they could drink with me, let them come to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Well, the sad news again, the West Indies losing to India, and continue to say, like the mighty Gabby, Lord, send an answer for we. What we will do next? You know, it was very, very hard. 448 for five. The West Indies, you know, making 162. Some debate as to whether they should have batted first in the second innings. 146 all out, losing by an innings, and a big, 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 big defeat. And the second test starts, well, Thursday night, Friday morning, just around 12 o'clock, and we're really hoping that the West Indies can do better. Not with interest that Ian Bishop is saying, look, batsmen, they've got to put their hands up and try and certainly improve. But at the moment, things are not looking good at all. Sad news, the death of Bernard Julian, that talented all-rounder, back in 19... I mean, I remember him doing very well, on a couple of tours, that Asian tour, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, England. Of course, would have gone for the World Cup. They're trying to make contact with Michael Holding, who, of course, would have gone on that 1975 tour. Bernard Julian was in that tour as well. We're going to get some reaction a bit later on from Sir Andy Roberts and Sir Clive Lloyd. May he rest in eternal peace. But we've been able to find his son, who actually is on Zoom with us this evening. And without any further ado, let me go across and say good evening to you, sir. How are you, Bevan?
Hi, good evening to everyone. Good evening.
Good evening. You must be a very sad man.
Not to be.
He was ailing for a while. How have you taken it? I suppose pretty hard.
Yeah, so everyone says that he's their hero and he's literally mine. So it's one thing to see him from afar as opposed to being almost the same person your dad is. So it was very hard, even though we knew it was coming. But for a lot of the Caribbean, so even towards certain parts in England and around the world, I didn't know his death would have had this big of an impact, you know?
I see. I know that Dr. Ford is with us as well. He would want to offer his tributes and maybe a question or two for Bevan. Dr. Ford?
Yes, good night to the listeners and the panel. Condolences to family of Bernard Julian, all the fans. I, as a youngster, watched him. You know, I like the the Afro side. I mean, you know, a beautiful run-up, talented player, and in a time when West Indies cricket was invincible and incredibly significant. And I held up those guys up as icons, and, you know, I send my condolences to everyone who holds Mr. Julian as someone as important to them. And I watched the ad with the, I think the cricketers did an ad for cologne, and, you know, I've seen video of them on planes. You know, these guys are larger than life, and a big loss to cricket and to Caribbean people and to all the Caribbean nations. You know, very, very important people. So That's my bit.
Mm-hmm. Philo? Philo?
Hi, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to our panelists. Good evening to Bevan, Julian. I met your father when I was in Trinidad some time ago. I also want to say hello to Sherlock Hart, where I have, and my friend Carlos. Bevan, your father was an icon. Greatest respect in the cricketing fraternity. When I went to Trinidad and met him, I was thrilled to actually sit with him. I think he was involved with Trinidad and Tobago's cricket. It was at our part. He was a very simple but very astute man. Good cricketing knowledge. And he was always there to advise. And I want to offer my deepest condolences to you and your family, to his family in Trinidad and the cricketing fraternity. Only to base Andy Roberts and myself were having some discussions about your dad and the popularity that he has around the world. And great loss to Trinidad and Tobago's cricket to West End of the world. Even a guy in England called me and told me he played for Kent. And he was a star boy at Kent. So it's a bitter taste, but he was a hero. I remember him as a hero. I do wish you and your family deepest condolences. And I hope that he gets the right send-off. And I hope also that the recognition that is bestowed upon him is bestowed upon him now. And hopefully celebrate the achievements that he has. Thank you.
Yeah. You want to respond, Bevan?
Yeah, I really appreciate it. A lot of people share the same sentiments that you did. And every time I do hear it, it does fill me with a sense of pride. I am I'm way younger than my dad, obviously. But I did not get to see him as the West Indies cricketer. I did not get to see him as the Trinidad cricketer. I saw him later in life. I actually played a couple matches with him. I remember specifically I was on a 5-wicket haul, and he could have been close to 60. And the dive he put on to try and make that catch, like, it was unbelievable, you know? So it does fill me with pride when I hear what he meant to a lot of people, and even people who are older than him say that he was their hero, you know, and an icon. So I am glad that he's getting this recognition now, because part of me felt as if he was the forgotten cricketer, you know, and it made me sad over a couple of years that who my father was and the recognition that he got or didn't get in his later years. So it does fill me with a lot of pride and joy with everything now.
Well, just before you come in, Basil, we were joined by Michael Holden. Good evening to you, Michael.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Michael?
I'm not bad at all. Not bad. Things can always be better, but it can also be much worse.
Right, okay. And of course, you would want to offer your tribute. We've lost Bernard Julian.
Yes, very sad. I want to first of all send my condolences to BJ's family and friends. You know, it's very sad, as you see, just 75 years old. That is young in today's world. But, you know, one would hope that he enjoyed his 75 years, although anyway, he had some issues in the latter stages.
Yes, and you would have toured with him. In fact, you started back in 1975, and Bernard would have been on that on that tour as well.
My association with BJ goes before 1973. It goes back a couple of years before that, because BJ and myself played in a president-level game in 1973 against Australia in Jamaica.
Oh, okay.
That is the first time I had any international experience. I was 18 years old, approaching 19. And BJ pretty much took me under his wing on that specific game, because he had already played for the West Indies. And he was one of the senior guys that was selected in that presidency. Clive Lloyd captained the team. And I'll never forget it. This happened 50-odd years ago, Andrew, but I'll never forget Bernard Julian coming to me, because we had a cocktail party to go to. And of course, it wasn't the West Indies team. We didn't have Blazers and that sort of thing. And me, 18 years old, still at school, I had no fancy dress. And BJ came to me when we were going to this function, saw me in an ordinarily Mickey Mouse shirt and pants going to this function, and said to me, "Mikey, you don't have anything other than this?" I said, "Bernard, no." And he took me to his room, and I'll never forget it, 50 odd years ago, he took me to his room and took out one of his pretty shirts, because, you know, those days everybody wore a pretty shirt, you know, and a nice pair of trousers. He took out one of his shirts and said to me, "Mikey, wear this tonight." I'll never forget that.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Any other fond memories of Bernard?
Definitely. You know, BJ was such a talented cricketer. You know, people will tell you that he enjoyed himself too much. I don't know about that. I don't know if anybody can enjoy themselves too much. BJ enjoyed himself, yes, and he was a talented cricketer. He showed his talent at various times in his career. As you mentioned, my first West Indies senior team tour now was 75-76. BJ was on that tour. And I remember him breaking his finger in Perth and still looking to come back to play again after that as quickly as he possibly could. When people were thinking, "Man, Dennis, Lil Jeff, Thompson, Max Walk, all them guys, the more time I can get off, the better." But not BJ. Mm-hmm. He was looking to come back as quickly as he possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say about BJ, Andrew, he had a good heart. I can't hear anybody, I remember anybody saying anything bad about BJ. Oh, he likes to party. That's his life. Which Trinidadian doesn't like to party?
That's true. That's very, very true. Doc, anything or Basil for Michael?
Not so much. Good evening to your listeners, and good evening to the great Michael Holden, who was somebody when I first saw him in 19, when he came to Guyana, as a youngster in his first Shell Shield. I went home and wanted to do just like him, seeing this skinny guy with the big afro running from the north throw there, and when the ball left his hand, the wicketkeeper was jumping high at border. You know that, and shortly in quick order, I realized I couldn't be like Michael Holden. But I would like to add to what Michael Holden said about Bernard Julian. I was fortunate to see Bernard Julian play several times at border. I remember the first time listening, never forget this, on the radio in 1973. I was a young boy when he made 100 at Lords along with Kanai and Sobers. That was his first tour. He was hailed to be the next Sobers at the time, you know, and then seeing him play at border as a youngster, all of us, you know, with the Afro and the Jackson, as they called it in those days, the sideburns, you know, I was able to meet him as a youngster. Always thought he was a smooth operator, you know, that left arm seam and swinging the ball both ways, and great in the field and a really good player. And also was fortunate to see him play his last test match at border in 1977 against Pakistan. A lot of things what young Bevan said about his father resonated with me, because I had a similar experience. My father, when he played, I was very young, so I didn't know nothing about my father as a West Indies cricketer. He was just dad to me. It was until I grew older and met people from all around the world, then I realized the kind of impact he and others had, you know. So I understand where you're coming from, young Julian, and I express again my condolences to your family. You know, as they would say, from a West Indies perspective, one of us has gone to the great beyond. Mm-hmm. And, you know, y'all, I hope the family stays strong and so on. All the best.
Dr. Ford, I know that Michael has got to go pretty soon. Anything for Michael?
Michael, I'm the one. But, I mean, for young Julian, I mean, as, you know, this a youngster watching your dad, do you think that West Indians and people in your island have appreciated the contribution of players like Bernard in the way that that's appropriate? Do you think that we have Have you taken them for granted, or do you feel that they've been looked at and honored in a way that they should have?
You see, does I might be a bit biased to this question, because I honestly saw, I did not see that my father was treated like a West Indies, former West Indies cricketer growing up. I didn't see him being lauded as someone who did great things. I didn't see him being coveted as one of the greats. Like after a certain time, maybe when I was younger, yes, when he was fresh out of playing cricket and everyone knew who he was. But by the time my dad was, let's say, 45, 50, I felt as if, like, I always have this feeling of my dad was the forgotten cricketer. Maybe not by his peers, because I know as a sportsman as well, your peers will always remember your talent, right? But I think that he, again, is a lot of hard times. Even through this period that he had, it was just us, you know? So I would say, I don't know if it's cultural, if it's Trinidad, if it's what, but I know we love to jump on what's hot and what's trending, as opposed to giving everybody their flowers.
Oh, dear.
Man, I love the afros. I love the look. I had my hot
yes.
braided my hair. So question for Mr. Holding. I know that maybe, you know, may have been thought of in higher esteem than Bernard Julian. But the question for Michael Holding is, are West Indian cricketers of that era thought of in, you know, with greater respect by people outside of the Caribbean than in the Caribbean, or do you think it's equal?
Well, Andrew, first of all, let me apologize. I didn't realize that you had BJ's family online. I just joined a couple of minutes before we started talking to me, right. So I wasn't aware of who else was on the call.
Yeah, Bevan Julian is his son. Yeah.
Yes. Can I now personally state to you and send you my condolences on your dad's loss? And of course, please relay that to all your family.
I will appreciate it much, man.
As far as recognition and acknowledgement of what players of that era did, I think everyone knows that outside of the Caribbean and inside of the Caribbean, the players of that era were well recognized, well respected. But of course, inside the Caribbean, we, as you said, culturally, not just Trinidad, culturally, we don't make a big hullabaloo about our own people, which, in my opinion, is a fault of ours. We should. Because people outside the Caribbean make a big hullabaloo and celebrate their own. We don't celebrate our own as much as we should. We don't write about them. Yes, we have some Calypsonians and a few people who have made a few records about specific instances in Caribbean cricket and specific cricketers, yes. But we don't really record our history. For instance, we have had people from outside the Caribbean who have come to the Caribbean and done documentaries about our cricket. We have never done that. We in the Caribbean have never done that to ourselves. We have people from outside the Caribbean who have come and written books about our Caribbean cricketers. Very few of us in the Caribbean write books about our own cricketers, even the cricketers themselves. Very few. So I think we can see that culturally, we don't do enough and recognize our people enough. And I'm not just talking about cricketers. I'm talking about a lot of different Caribbean artists and great people that are recognized and celebrated a lot more overseas. I'm not saying we're not appreciated in the Caribbean, but we don't record it. We don't put it down for it to last forever. And I think that's a fault that we need to correct.
Okay, well, second question for you, Mr. Holding. I mean, you know, you shouldn't compare eras, but in your era, there was, you know, economics always plays a part of the game. In your era, there was Kerry Packer. They were the tourists to South Africa, but there was more politics involved then and other things compared to franchise cricket now. But it still causes a divide and reduces our resources for our West Indian team. How do you compare back then with, you know, players having to choose between, let's say, Kerry Packer or South Africa versus what's happening now with franchise cricket and the evolution of white ball and short version cricket to the economics and the, you know, for this short career of professional cricketers?
Well, when you started to talk about comparing what happened years ago and what's happening now, I might be a little bit different. I don't just think about economics. If I was thinking only about economics, and again, I'm talking about me. I'm not trying to judge other people or just say what other people should and should not do. I don't think only of dollars and cents. If I thought only of dollars and cents, I would have gone to South Africa. And again, I'm not condemning those who went to South Africa during apartheid. Every man has to live his life. Every man has to make his own choices. But today, to choose between playing franchise cricket and any other cricket, I'm not condemning anyone who wants to go and play franchise cricket. We have to look at the fact that today you have got to think about people's futures. We have a lot of great West Indian cricketers of years gone by who were much greater than the ones that are currently playing today, or even greater than in my time. And they did not have enough earnings to secure their future after playing the game. And they ended up, some of them struggled, some of them got by. I'm not going to tell a cricketer today that you must turn your back on big earnings when it is possible that you have a family and a future to consider, because sportsmen, you have a pretty short shelf life. And when you have come to the end of that career as a sportsman, you still have to live. Most sportsmen don't go beyond, unless you are a jockey, for instance, you might go into your 50s. But most sportsmen don't go beyond 40 or early 40s. You still have, hopefully, another 40 years to live.
Mm-hmm.
So you have got to think about securing your future and your family's future. So I'm not going to tell anybody, oh, don't go and play IPL. I went and played Kerry Packer for much less money, obviously, but at that time it was a lot more than what was being paid at the time. And I have no regrets. There's no way I'm going to tell anybody that I think I made a mistake to go and play Kerry Packer, because that changed my life totally. I was at university. The year before, I had gone to Australia, earned $600 for the entire 75, 76 tour. $600 US, that's what I earned for that tour. And a man comes along a year and a half later and offers me $25,000 for the same thing. How can you say no? Mm-hmm. And I did not at that stage even think about being a professional cricketer. If I went to Kerry Packer, I would not have played cricket the length of time that I did. My mother was a school teacher, a headmistress for many, many years, and she kept on saying to me, Mikey, get a piece of paper behind your name. I was at university when Packer started, and I left university to go and play Packer. I'm not going to tell a youngster today, somebody's offering you $500,000 to go and play for 6 weeks, and you go and you must say no. What I would say is, try to remember your roots. Try to remember who gave you an opportunity early in life. Just as you, in the form of life, you know, even if in business, even just day-to-day living, you don't walk away from it, your mother and your father when you get a good job and say you don't care about them anymore. They are the ones who brought you onto earth, brought you into life. Remember them. That's all I'm saying to people. Don't forget your roots. If you can share, share. If you have an opportunity to help, help. That's all I'm saying. But I'm not telling anybody to turn their back on good money.
Interesting. Doc, any follow-up questions there? I see you're making some notes. By the way, we've been joined by Billy Haven, who, of course, is the former Jamaica Cricket Board president, and we're gonna he's going to be offering his thoughts pretty soon. Yes, Doc.
Personally, I think, you know, we've seen you know, we had Reds Pereira and Tony Kozier. I see Michael Holden as the last of the great West Indian commentators. And my question is, a guy with your intellect, your cricketing knowledge, I'm still surprised that you walked away from commentary. So explain that to us, how, because you know Richie Bernard went on for a long time. What was your thinking in you know, calling it today for that part of your career?
Well, my decision to retire from commentary is very personal. It has to do with me and family. Nothing to do with me thinking, oh, I'm too old for the job. But to be honest, since I've walked away from the game, or I've walked away from commentary, I have gotten more and more reasons to think that I did the right thing. The atmosphere and what that surrounding the game now, and the entire atmosphere in general, with racism and wars here and wars, your people are going to ask your opinion. I'm glad I'm out of the limelight so nobody can ask. Because not, people not going to like to hear what I have to say.
That's interesting.
I would like to ask Mikey a question. Sure. Good evening, Michael Holden. Fellow Wallace here. Nice to hear you.
Evening.
Nice to have you on set. I know we're supposed to be paying tributes to Bernard Julian. Mikey, fast bowling. What makes a fast bowler? What sustains a fast bowler?
Well, it depends on what you're going to term a fast bowler now. Because, you know, you have fast and you have medium fast and you have swing bowlers. You know, Bernard Julian was a fantastic swing bowler of medium pace. Who could bowl a very good bouncer? You can ask a few batsmen about that. Yes, but if you're going to talk about an outside
fast bowler, all of them going to bowl a
bounce. No. Some of them could bowl a bounce, right? The ball is lost. You have to replace that ball. But Bernard Julian could bowl an excellent bouncer. And I think his fact that he was a left-hander helped him as well, because he could hit the deck and steam it back into you at good pace. He didn't try to bowl fast all the time, but when he bowled that bouncer, you knew. But getting back to the point about fast bowlers, we're talking about people now bowling high 80s, 90 odd miles an hour. It is very important for that person to be fit and strong. And when I say fit and strong, I'm not talking about going into a gym and lifting 500 pounds. I'm talking about doing a lot of running to cardio work, to make sure that you can run, and at the end of the day, you still can run in. Your legs have to be strong, your body has to be strong, but you don't have to look like Johnny Wismala. And that is important as a fast bowler. I went to the gym, I lifted weight, but nobody could look at me and say they knew I went into the gym, because it was just a matter of getting strong. It was not a matter of trying to impress people with the way I looked.
Thank you, Michael.
If you're not fit and strong, you can't be a fast bowler and be effective. If you're only going to bowl 5 overs and be tired, which is what happened to me when I first played for Jamaica, you ain't going to get very far. Because I played for Jamaica when I was at school. I had no idea what fitness was like.
What about the mindset of a fast bowler?
Well, that is difficult to describe, you know, because you're going to have different mindsets for different fast bowlers, you know. Courtney Walsh's mindset was different from Jeff Thompson. Jeff Thompson, he jam blood, comes, he has no problem. Courtney Walsh, he jam, he sees blood, he takes out his hanky, he wants to cry. So you can have different mindsets. It's a matter of whether you are willing as a person, you have the strength of character to do the work and know that it's going to be painful work and still be willing to push yourself through that. That is what is important.
I got a question for Mikey. Good evening, Mikey. Basil Jr.
Good evening. Let us not stray too far away from BZ.
No, and this is related to Julian.
His thing.
This is related to Julian, Bernard Julian. In your opinion, how would you rate Bernard Julian as a bowler? What you saw of him in your era and related to, again, we don't like to compare errors, but in terms of the skill that he possessed as a swing bowler to being playing in this era. Do you see many bowlers today are having that type of skill that Bernard Julian possessed when he played?
Well, first of all, let me clarify something. I haven't watched any cricket for the last 4 years.
Really?
And when I say cricket, I mean any cricket. I don't watch cricket right. anymore. You know?
All right.
If I can't watch my team and be happy with watching my team, I can't watch anything. You know, mm-hmm. people love cricket and they will watch Ashes. I would watch the Ashes if the West Indies had a good team and was being competitive and could play against everybody and be competitive. But I can't mm-hmm. talk about watching India play Australia or England play Australia, those teams, knowing that I would not want to be watching my team play because of the pain. So I don't watch cricket anymore. But okay. as for Bernard Julian's skill, he was a highly skilled bowler. He was a good cricketer. You know, people talk about his bowling, mention of his century at Lords as well. Obviously, he was a good batsman. He could field anywhere. He was in the sticks mostly. He could be doing at fine leg. He could be in the covers. Bernard Julian was just a fantastic, talented cricketer. Someone made mention earlier on that he was dubbed to be the next Sobers. I don't think that's a mantle that should have been thrown on his shoulder to put so much pressure on him. Because Sir Garfield Sobers, Gary Sobers at the time, you don't compare people to that sort of thing that easily. Like telling a footballer is the next Pele. That's not easy. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's very true. Okay, we're going to pause. Okay, Doc, you come with a question before we go to the break.
I remember seeing Julian bowl a lot, and I love that, but I don't think we really appreciate him as a batsman. The team was so good mm-hmm. that he may not have been able to be a sterling contributor in the batting, but do you think he could have batted in the top six in that time or in this time?
Michael,
modern day.
I want you to remember, I mentioned BJ breaking his finger in Australia 10-5 Tennessee. Anybody remember what position he batted to break his finger?
He opened.
He opened the batting.
Oh, dear.
He opened the batting at Perth in 1975, the quickest pitch in the world at the time. I think they have now moved from the Waka to some other ground. I'm not too sure what the pitch in Perth is like now, but at that time, that was the quickest pitch in the world against the fastest bowlers in the world. And he volunteered to open because we selected one opener in that test match by some quirk that I don't know why, how come. But we bowled first, which delayed the catastrophe of not knowing who was going to be opening. We bowled first. When we bowled out Australia, went back to the dressing room. And Roy Fredericks was the only man padding up because there was no other opener that was selected. Bachan was there. He wasn't selected. Fredericks and Bernard Julian volunteered. I will go.
Wow.
Nobody pointed at him and said, Bernard Julian, you go and go. Bernard Julian put his hand up and said, I will go with Fredo.
Tremendous courage.
He wasn't afraid to go there. He knew his talent as well. Mm-hmm. He knew his talent. He had courage. He knew his talent. And as I said before, he had a good heart. He didn't want anybody to go there thinking, oh, I'm going to the slaughter. I can't manage this. So he insisted that he would go and he went.
Andrew?
Yes.
Bernard Julian averaged almost 31 in Test cricket. As a batsman,
yes.
We don't have a single batter on our team averaging 30. So, and he got 2 test centuries. So, how many of these guys playing in the team batting in the top 6 for us now got 2 test centuries?
That 5-1, it was called a drubbing, but even though I would have listened and known about it, I never felt embarrassed, or I was still proud of the team and what it had done, because we competed, and I still remember the 6 and out with Fredericks, and you know, I felt good about the team, and then that team went on after that to create things for an extended period. when you compare that, even though you're not watching, with what the team does now and their inability to compete, how do you, I understand what that does with you being withdrawn from watching the cricket, but what has really gone wrong there with our team not being able to compete?
Well, I have a slightly different thought and opinion about our cricket than a lot of people. You know, before I retired and before I have been staying home, I used to hear people in the Caribbean, people outside the Caribbean, West Indians and others, say, oh, West Indies no longer produce cricketers. In my opinion, that is rubbish. West Indies still produce talented cricketers, but the entire landscape of cricket has changed around the world. And the talented cricketers that we have now and producing now do not get the opportunity to develop the way that cricketers of the past 20, 30 years ago developed. You can't tell me that a batsman that makes a century in each innings of a test match against England at Leeds, where the ball moves around more than anywhere else in England, has no talent. You can't tell me that bowlers who keep on bowling opposition out, irrespective of who they play against, have no talent. You can't tell me that, I won't call any name, but some young batsmen that I saw 4, 5, 6 years ago, when I saw them, I thought to myself, our batting is in good hands. But again, because of the lack of proper development, they don't progress the way they should. A lot of them then gravitate towards the shorter form of the game, because it is easier, it is more money than to stick with the longer form. And again, I'm not chastising them, but I'm just stating the fact. We still produce good cricketers. It's a matter of finding a way to develop them properly and have them playing for the West Indies instead of playing in these 2020 tournaments or sharing it. As I made mention earlier on, share it. Play a bit of this and play a bit of this. Because, as I said, you have to remember where you came from. I remember a tour of Australia when I was still watching, that us West Indies went to Australia and we had about 9 of our best cricketers playing in the Big Bash and not playing for the West Indies. They were available to the Big Bash but not available to the West Indies. And if they were not talented cricketers, they would not be getting contracts in the Big Bash. So we still have the talent. It's a matter of finding ways of developing that talent and making sure that that talent plays for the West Indies. Not necessarily 100% of the time, but as much as possible so that we can continue to be competitive and continue to attract youngsters to the game and attract sponsors to our cricket. That's all we need to do. How that is going to happen, I don't know, because that's, the ICC obviously don't care about West Indies cricket or any other smaller nations. All they want to do is the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And that's not just the ICC. I see that happening all over the world. I won't call any country's name.
I see. Okay, let's pause for business calls. Ken Husbands has just joined us. Michael, we're going to let you go pretty soon. I know that you've been on for a little bit, so we're going to wrap pretty soon. But let's pause for business calls and come back on Mason and Guest. Mason and Guest, broad association with our good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, before we go back to Michael and to talk to Bevon, let's say good evening to Billy Haven, the former president of the Jamaica Cricket Association, former West Indies Cricket Board director, who joins us. Hello, Billy, how are you?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to your guests. Good evening, Mikey.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Billy, how are you?
I'm good, good.
Yes, you've been listening to Michael. Any reaction to anything he said so far, Billy?
Mikey has always been very frank. It's always interesting to listen to Mikey Holden speak, but he's coming from a position of not necessarily opinion, but from a position of facts. Mm-hmm. He's very practical, and he puts that on the table, like it or I don't like it. So, you know, it's something I respect him for, and will always do so, because, you know what you're getting, and you can rely on what he says.
Mm-hmm. And you must be very concerned about West Indies cricket. I mean, I know that you're very much there in Jamaica, former president for quite a while. Like Michael Holden, you must be very concerned what's happening now.
I guess any West Indian, Andrew, and it doesn't matter if you like cricket or don't like cricket, but, you know, a true-hearted West Indian, for whatever reason, must be concerned about what is happening to cricket in the Caribbean. Once the pride of the world, you know, struggles with weak performances, I read about financial strains. And of course, we are aware of the administrative challenges that the game is facing. You know, weak on-field performance, poor governance. I will never leave out that out of any discussion. Poor governance. We have some outdated infrastructure. If you look at a lot of the stadia around the Caribbean, they were built in 2007 for that World Cup. There is a talent drain to T20 leagues, and I heard Mike's comment on it. And we should never ever seek to prevent anyone from earning a livelihood. What we should do is to find a way around that, align schedules, offer maybe incentives to test on ODIs, revise players' contract, and so on, to allow everybody an opportunity. We have limited grassroots development. We have what I would call fragmented regional unity. And if you look at what is happening to our cricket, indeed, a natural spin-off is falling fan engagement. So there are a lot of issues that we that we face, and I would like to maybe comment on the financials a little bit, given that I chaired that finance committee for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the ball is in your court. We had Chris Darren on the show last week, and he was saying virtually that I asked if the board is broke, but it would appear as if they don't have a lot of money. Billy.
I don't know what is called a lot of money, Andrew. There's a managed CWI financing. The revenues to CWI in particular, it is cyclical. So we use a 4-year cycle because of the nature of the income stream with its peaks and its valleys. And you have to even out the cash flow. Now, if that is not done, you're bound to have problems, because when you have a peak and you spend against that peak, then when the dry seasons come and you don't have any money, then you call it a problem and a dilemma. You simply did not manage your cash flow properly. I noticed that Mr. Dering went back 15 years ago. That's a long time in the past. But what I also noticed is that he focused on two line items alone, which is flights and hotel, and, you know, flight for players and officials and hotels and accommodation. And I think that was something like $202 million US over 15 years. The truth be told, that's just $13.5 million per year. But what he didn't say, and I hope that CWI will say much more on this and provide more information so that Caribbean people can understand and put meaning to those numbers. What he did not say is the flights and hotel, what percentage of your overall expenditure were those two line items? We don't know that. Neither did we know, or do we know, what percentage of your income those two line items accounted for. So in order for us to understand, and in order to help us to understand these two line items which were singled out, I would like to see, and not necessarily for the 15 years, because I've never heard anyone quoted figures over a period of 15 years before. But be that as it may, I look, Andrew, on the financials that I could find on the internet. In 2018, the revenue of CWI was $20.9 million. In 2019, it was $69.1 million. In 2020, with the advent of COVID, it was $23.6 million. In 2023, it was $62.5 million. And in 2024, when we had the World Cup, it was $88.35 million. So over that period of time, 5 years, randomly chosen, CWI earned $264 million. And when you look at the expenses against that for the same period, it was $238 million. So there was a retained earnings for that period of $25.7 million. And to date, when I look at the 2024 financials, there's retained earnings of $34.9 million. So I don't think CWI is suffering from a balance sheet issue. What CWI is suffering from is a cash flow issue.
Oh.
And you require cash flow management if you are to navigate narrow income streams, which I don't believe is happening now. Remember, we took CWI through COVID period without laying off a single person. You know, and I believe there needs to be astuteness in how the financials are managed.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting point you make. I'm sure that Dr. Ford and Basil Butcher and, of course, Philo would make a comment. But just before you go, Michael.
Yes,
sir. Yes, I'm going to let you go now. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel for West Indies cricket, Michael?
Andrew, I can't comment on that. I don't know what's up. I haven't watched for 4 years, so I can't say that I see talent or don't see talent or I see progress or don't see progress. All I've been seeing is scores on ESPN cricket.
Oh,
I do not watch, so I cannot comment on something like that.
I see.
But I know we need the ICC to look at cricket globally, not just England, India, and Australia. They are not the only countries that play cricket. They are the three richest countries, and yet still they are still taking up about 75% of all the money. That is ridiculous. And I'll leave you on that.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you, Michael, for coming and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
No problem. And again, condolences to BJ's family and his friends. Mm-hmm. I remember what he did for me 50-odd years ago. I'll never forget it. And as I said, he had a good heart. I don't know of anyone that would tell that BJ cursed them or went behind their back and said bad things about them. Or I don't know of that. And there are many others that I would say that of.
I see. Michael, thanks very much for coming on, Mason. And guests, enjoy your evening. Rest of your evening.
All the best to all your listeners and your guests as well, Andrew. Take care.
Thank you very much indeed. The great Michael Holden, very much a part of our Mason and guests this evening. And, of course, we still got Bevan Julian. Bevan, and any word on when the funeral is going to be for your dad?
So the date we have for the funeral is the 18th of October. It's a bit far because a lot of my brothers and sisters are in America. They were here recently. They came to see him because of his state, so I wanted to give them enough time to prep to come. So it's the 18th at 11 a.m. at St. Finbar's Church in Digo Martin.
And you've got a pretty big family. What, 9 of you? Is that correct? 9?
Yeah, 9 of us. Mm-hmm. But there's really 9,000 Julians out there. So, we have a big family, my aunts have a lot of children, uncles, a lot of children. So we needed one of the biggest churches that we could have had.
I see. Mm-hmm. In Diego Martin, you said, huh?
Yeah.
Philo, do you know that church? Have you gone there, Philo? You spent a lot of time in Trinidad, Philo.
Yeah, I lived there for 10 years, Andrew. It's a very big church in Simbas, yes, in Diego Martin.
Mm.
And it's a fitting place for Bernard Julian to be sent off. to be sent off. I think he is the right place. And I do hope, Bevan, that he gets massive turnouts and he gets accolades. I know it don't happen when you're alive, but you as his son and the other siblings will feel proud to know that your father was well respected in the cricketing world. And we heard Michael Holden, what he has done for him. Yeah. And those are things that should please you to be a Julian. Not only having an outstanding father, but having a father who stood up as a man and represented as a man and played cricket with pride and passion. Mm-hmm. For Trinidad and Tobago and West Indies.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks, Bevan, for coming on Mason the Guest. And we wish you well. May your father rest in eternal peace.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before Bevan goes, I'd like to ask Bevan.
Sure.
I mean, as the son of someone who was an international cricketer of some repute, do you think really that there needs to be something put in place for, you know, whoever, it could be the Cricketers Association or something for cricketers to get some sort of pension or some sort of sustenance after they finish representing for a certain number of years? I mean, I don't know what your father did after he finished with cricket, but I know that for some players that's a struggle. What are your feelings there?
Well, like I said before, it wasn't the greatest of times after my dad had a lot of lose, right? Obviously, in any world, we would love to have the fraternities of all sports, not just cricket, look after former players after a period of time. Like Michael said before, a lot of athletes don't have the opportunity to make money after they're done being athletes. And it's the sad truth. So obviously, yes, I wish there would be more things put in place. But I mean, times are changing now with the endorsements that a lot of the athletes had, which my dad wouldn't have had. With the opportunities, with the IPLs, etc. Those are things that help now. So that's why I would have liked to have spoken on it earlier, when Michael was saying that a man has to do what he has to do. The opportunities now, compared to then, is miles apart. And we have, like, my dad in this era, because a lot of people may not have known, he also played football. He won the intercol for his school. He was a left winger who scored from the corner. He was a natural athlete. He did everything. So my dad playing in an IPL, hitting the ball hard, swing bowling, amazing fielder. We would have been rich. We would have been multimillionaires by now, you know? So, I mean, obviously, things are how they are. Part of what I said, I will share what I said to him. I told him if he has to do it again, to do it the same way. Because without him going to South Africa, I may not have been here.
I see.
So, I think, as Michael said, no regrets. But I just appreciate, like Mr. Wallace said, that he is getting his flowers now, and I hope the turnout is great. I want to send him off great. There will be a live stream that I could send for him, and he's going to get a hell of a eulogy from me, you know?
Okay. You're doing the eulogy, all right? Well?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Mason and Guests, and I know that we've been speaking. And certainly we here at Mason and Guest family, we hope that you will remain strong and our sympathies, and you will your father rest in eternal peace. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for having me. Take care, guys.
All right. God, thank you very much. That's Bevan Julian, the son of Bernard Julian, who's gone to the great beyond at 75. His funeral is going to be on October the 18th. In Dago Martin. So you heard it on Mason and Guest. Let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we got Billy Haven, of course, with us. I'm sure that he's got some other things to say in relation to what's happening in West Indies cricket. The lines are open as well, 441790. Mason and Guest, Broughton Association with the good friends at ESA Field White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ESA Field White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Yeah, Billy, let's come back to you. Struggling to such an extent that no more CCC, no more academy. That must be of some concern to you as a former director, Billy.
Certainly, Andrew. I was with Professor Bettles a couple nights ago, and the concerns are right out there. You can't have a defending champion who you just ask out of a competition like that, you know, without even an opportunity. But even deeper than that, and more fundamental than that, mm-hmm. by axing two teams, and those two teams are developmental teams, you're begging for trouble down the road, because you're bound to have negative consequences on West Indies cricket when you do that. When you compromise the development of the game, you're destroying the future, and that is in furtherance of its demise, which is what is starting now. When you look at the financials, even in 23-24, Andrew, mm-hmm. they spent over $2 million on development expenses. And in 2024, in the year of the World Cup, they spent $1 million. That's 50% of what we spent in 2023. When you spend that, when you have a pattern like that on the development aspect of the game, you're not thinking long term, you're thinking short term. Mm. And we struggle because we have not spent enough time on the development aspect of it. We just want to go out there and begin to win. But the sustainability model is not in place to support what we want. So we end up with weak on-field performance. We have a poor governance framework in place. We have this high level of financial dependency and weakness. We have, you know, our grassroots cricket, our support for territorial boards. Instead of providing more support to territorial boards, CWI is now writing off the funds owed to territorial boards. So we have some issues to deal with. Those issues are compounded by other things. You know, it's compounded by the severity of the defeats that we're having. It is compounded by the coaching controversy. It is compounded by the several conflicts of interest at CWI. So we have to get a lot of things right in order to build back confidence and to get sponsorship. Sponsorships don't come like that. Sponsors will have to build up confidence in the organization that they're putting their monies into, and they expect back. So, you know, we have a lot of issues to deal with and to sort out. Not just the cricket, that is, that the cricket is being impacted because that's a product. But there are other factors that I believe. And when you look at the finances, you know, that weakness and that deficiency is a derivative of what is happening in and around the game.
Hmm. So I want to ask Billy here for the question.
Sure.
He said a mouthful there about problems internal and all the other stuff. But Billy said, as a director of CWI, he said that CWI is writing off the debt to the territorial board. How do directors, and the directors, Mr. Haven, have sat there, some of them, for close to 20 years or more, how can directors, who are some of them who are the presidents of territorial boards, sit and allow CWI to make such decisions? You talk about the coaching, the coach, that little problem with the coach. They have a cricket committee that is chaired by a director who is also a president of a territorial board. How do these decisions come about, that all these mistakes are being made and no one is held accountable for all of these mistakes in CWI's cricket. Mm. But I saw the when I saw the article, I was shocked. And if you don't manage your resources well, then you can find yourself in pitfalls. So who mismanaged the funds? We don't even know who works for CWI framework anymore, because they keep chopping and changing. We've taken out two developmental teams from our competition. So where is the development going to happen? The territorial boards are not doing it. So where is it going to happen? So how can these decisions be made and then made public and want us to swallow it?
Billy?
It's you know, taking out of two developmental teams, you know, it's blamed on the financial resources. But that's the wrong decision, because there are other line items. If you look at the financials and you look through the operating expenses and you look at the other line items, you'll see where that's not the biggest expenditure line item. That's not the biggest one. And so what we need is there's an urgent need to change the structure of CWI. And the Webby report spoke to this. But in particular, the cost structure of CWI. When you look at travels as and per diems relating to directors and so on, you could easily have savings there to fund this tournament easily. But instead of making the adjustments, the easy way out perhaps is to ask these two developmental teams. And the consequences, as I said before, will be felt. The, in terms of CWI and decisions, circular, sometimes they are made in an unusual way. Sometimes these decisions are made before the meetings. And let's call a spade, because there are always people, for whatever reason, either out of self-interest or interest to territories or what, there are always people who will support the decision that is not within the greater good of the game.
I mean, the lack of, in a team that's been struggling for three decades, the lack of development and planning is a death knell for the West Indies cricket. And we have to embrace and accept that what it is. I mean, I can remember our first challenges being, I mean, when Phil Simmons was a player, if how we can mix experience with youth. But I'd say for Billy, you know, revenue, Lara was speaking recently and was talking about how revenue has kind of thwarted our development, but also this player passion. But my question is, over these decades, what do you attribute to the inability to increase the revenue from even from within the Caribbean? And the question is the brand damaged to an extent that we cannot really harness any increased revenue? Or does the brand
still exist? Yeah. A part of it maybe the brand, yeah. But when the matter of writing off debts, territorial board debts came up, I advised the board against doing so. I'm not sure if the minutes will show that. But I said to them, what this will do is to damage confidence in CWI, and their lenders won't be in any hurry to provide support, funding, financial support to CWI, because the financial sector operates on confidence, not interest rate on those things, on terms alone. It operates on confidence. And once confidence is lost, you're going to struggle. CWI relies heavily on ICC distribution of funds, heavily. Now, you know how that goes. And outside, TV rights and all of those have dipped, and dipped significantly. I was surprised when I look at the accounts for 2024 in the World Cup year to see TV rights in that year. Dipped significantly. So when you look at the income stream and the composition of the income stream, it was made up of loans and in bygone years to provide gap financing. And that should still be an option available to CWI because of the peaks and the valleys. So you use short-term loan to bridge those gaps. But coming off of a World Cup year when you earn $88 million, it baffles me to see that in the following year, you're having a financial problem to the extent that you have to cut two teams from the competition. That bothers me.
That bothers me too, Billy.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to pause for business calls. We're going to come back very soon. 4341790. Mason and guests brought in association with our good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, let's look at the time. I don't have a lovely watch. Like, what time is it? Tell me there.
23 minutes after 7. Good time to say good evening to your guest, my good friend, Philo. Philo, how do you do?
Good evening, Ken. I'm very well. So nice to hear you.
I thought it was 7:24.
Well, it's coming on there. But you can get a few seconds with me.
Okay, fair enough indeed. Seconds. All right. 4341790. Let's take a call. Can we, Ken? Yeah, hello. Welcome, Mason and guests.
Yes, good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, and good evening.
And good evening to your guests. It is a little heart-wrenching that we have lost the way we have lost in India to the West Indies team. I do hope, you know, the last couple of test matches that we would have played on the outside, that we were able to eke out a win.
Mm.
Is it? This is going to be another occasion that we're going to eke out a win against India.
Mm.
If that could happen, that would be heartwarming for the people in the Caribbean.
What do you think? What do you think? You think we can eke out a win?
Well, they've done it. They've eked out 3 wins outside, so we'll see how this one is going to work out.
Mm.
Now, outside of that, Andrew, I think one of the problems.
I'm afraid it's highly unlikely.
I'll say that one of the problems I think the West Indies teams are faced with, we are having the wrong people at the top of West Indies cricket.
Mm.
Now, when you look on the outside of England and Australia and these persons, they are persons who are cladded with cricket, real cricket knowledge at the top. This one-man selector, if we don't get rid of that before Christmas, West Indies cricket is going to sink further and further down. Mm. We need to have no less than 3 people selecting these squads to go and play cricket, not a one man. Then you are on trial. Right now we are on trial. And if you go to the High Court, as Philo should know, You don't have one High Court judge, appeal judge dealing with the case. You have 3, 5, or maybe 7.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the situation, so we need really to get 3 selectors to select the nucleus of these West Indies teams, and we need these guys that are the top should be doing the office work and let the persons who are a lot more versed.
Right.
In cricket, to be at the head of the spring so as to carry the cricket forward. We are getting a little too much talk and nothing is happening. You know, just a lot of talk. Mm-hmm. And until we do that, our cricket is going to continue to slip and slip. If we don't get back 3 selectors, our cricket is continuing to slip and slip and slip down. That's my contribution for the night.
Thank you. Let's try and take a couple more calls before we go back to the panel. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good night, Mr. Mason.
Good night to you, sir.
I got 3 little points to put to you.
Sure.
First thing, my condolences to Bernard Julian's family.
Right.
Good player. That's when we had cricketers. Next thing, you hear Mr. Waller talking just now? You hear the boss talking just now?
Yes.
He ain't a fraud. He tell it as it is. That's what the people don't want. He wrong. And he do the best thing to move from wrong. Because he's talking mind. And when he's talking mind, people don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did all this town, all right? You see the sign-off that Russell get? That sign-off should have gone to Marlon Samuels. Marlon Samuels has done more for Western's cricket than that for us. And he's gone in the wilderness. And the boy doing what he and everybody. He put jewelry recovered. And we just forget who do good for me.
Mm-hmm.
That don't mean things worry me. Mm-hmm. But what I expect that we the good end be in it, the team that we got. We could be in there when we had a team. For more, we set up for first know that. First, I ain't playing the cricket. Mm. Someone runs on the ball, Samek.
Not many.
Right. And we had a big old man that played cricket for the West Indies that do a lot. And the first of the day is droppy. We play, good night, Sonny. We play Australia. Australia be a opening batsman down here near Constant. And Constant, and do no way. Better than Buffett. And then people play all the matches and they take Buffett and Droppy. And no Tony Talbot. They will come about what? They forgotten what? Then don't get Buffett. But look, every time saying, yeah, you say, well, look, it pleased my heart. You picked 10 minutes, you know they were glad, you were glad for Ross and a match. But as you get 29, 30 in the universities, people just forget you. I don't want to see all that 30. Where I get 60 ways. Mr. Messi was treating people better, man.
I agree with that. Thanks for your contribution.
Thank you, man.
Let's try and nip one or two more calls before we go back to the panel, of course, a little bit later on. For pretty soon, we got a big finals coming up Barbados. Hold on, call up. We got a big finals coming up in Barbados on the weekend. We'll be up against Guardiola. We're going to be speaking to the captains pretty soon. Let's take another call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, no. First thing first, that was the new thing that wrong with me. How come the government is keeping the money? First thing the team send back, the one you talk, you have to build first. This short, 32 Jordan. Fields is a very good opening bowler. The problem is, he's very weak with the batting. So we have to bowl first to get what we could get, and then step, and then follow on. One, two. Now you see Michael Hurley speak. That is like I love Michael Hurley and Andy Roberts. They're calm and they speak great, along with Jalil Wally. Now, moving on. Except at the end, you see they come calling, they got the money. Then money's misused. These are the things that happen. We cannot refuse to play those two young teams. We're depending on them for the future of West Indies cricket. Why these people don't come on the program and speak the truth? When you come with these big joint parties, that I said it last week, going to say it again. The tour and the joint party,
The management, calling the management team is very big, very, very big indeed.
Very big, very big. Now, if you come to one of them, and they see the West Indies have a manager,
right,
and it's for their purpose, and we are winning, how can you want all these people? If you cut three quarters of them, you can either add two more teams instead of cutting two. These are the kind of problems that we continue to have. And you see the thing, we got to go back to the drawing board. We got to be honest. We can talk about grassroots cricket. It's not grassroots cricket. You remember when the Richards talked to the guys that even the overseas players were so excited to hear the Richards. That tells you something. People look for people that they can respect, people that know the game, and do to carry forward. When you bring people that people have no respect for, you're going away. Thank you.
All right. Another call just before we go back to the panel. Can we take another one? Yes, we can. As it approaches 7:30. Hello, welcome.
Yeah, hi, good evening to you, Mr. Mason.
Good evening to you.
Good evening to your guest. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Okay. Mr. Holding brought tears to my eyes when the great man said that he does not even watch cricket again. That is the most serious indictment you can have on all cricket. He said, I don't watch because he's not interested in watching other teams because he knows that our team is playing rubbish, right? I thought you were going to be mad enough to ask him about his comment in relation to Rion King. Right? But listen to Holding. What I hear, even without actually focusing on what he actually says, just hearing Holden speak, there's a kind of energy that emanates from the man. It actually makes me feel inspired. I've always admired him as a cricket mind, and I've loved his forthrightness. And he actually said this evening that one of the reasons he doesn't say anything because he knows that people are not going to like what he says. He's that kind of no-nonsense person. And as the your other guest in the studio, I didn't quite get his name, Billy
Haven. He's still with us, a former cricket West Indies director and former president of the Jamaica Cricket Association. Has been around for quite a long time.
Okay, but I want to say a special good evening to him because I get the sense that he is a very meticulous kind of person. He checks his figures, but he too said that when you ask awkward questions or you're too outspoken,
right,
people don't want you wrong. And I think that is the problem in our cricket and in our culture. People do not want to be held to account. And until we develop systems where there's transparency and accountability, we will think in our cricket, in our football, in our politics, in all aspects of our life. The main problem with our cricket and culture, I think, is the attitude of our people. We need to find ways to develop men of wholesome and strong character. Without that, we're just spinning our tops in mud. And finally, we send our, I call them fake West Indians, because in my opinion, we're not Indians, so I don't know how we can be West Indians. But we send them up there to confront the real Indians. I think there are over a billion of them. What do you expect? We're going to be slaughtered every time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if you want great cricketers, we need to focus on building great men, men of character, people who understand the importance of hard work, diligence, commitment, struggle, you know, real character. And most of all, we need systems of that enforce transparency and accountability in all aspects of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Else, we're spinning our tops in mud.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you guys have a good evening.
Thank you very much indeed. All right, one more? Okay, the producer is saying one more before we go back to Japan. Hello, welcome.
Hello, good night, Mr. Mason.
Hey, good night to you. Well, Billy Haven is Jamaican like you. Say hello to Billy Haven.
Good night, sir.
Billy, this is a Jamaican who comes on the show very often. Anton is his name. How old are you again, Anton? Is it 12, 13 now?
Yes, I'm 12, sir.
All right, right, all right. And what part of Jamaica are you from? I know that...
I'm from Hanover, sir.
Hanover, I think Billy is a Westmoreland man. Are you a Westmoreland man, Billy?
Yes, neighboring
Hanover. Anton, have you ever gone to Westmoreland?
Yes, sir.
All right. What part of Hanover were you born?
I'm from Hanover, but I wasn't born in Hanover. I was born in the parish very next to it, Montego Bay, St. James.
Oh, you were born in Montego Bay. Okay, wonderful. All right. What do you have to share with us tonight?
Yes, sir. So about the West Indies, they disappoint me once more, but as we all do, we love them. But, sir, I want to ask you a serious question. Sir, every single time the West Indies get beat, they're coming with the same thing, but they know what to do. They're going to try to stick with them plans. And, sir, how you could be going and getting beat by innings and 140 runs?
Yes.
And, sir, what happened to Kevin Hodge that is not being selected?
Yes. That's very poor. He really should have. I mean, he went to England and made 100 and can't make the side after that. That's not good.
Yes, Lee. And also, sir, for the last few innings, sir, we have not been scoring no near to 200.
No.
So, and that is bad, sir. We have one of the best bowling lineups with Shamar, Azhari, Jaden, and Justin, sir. But, like, the batters got to try and step up. If at least, say, half of the side get 40 and the other half get about 30, 35 runs, we could still deal with that, and then we could grow even more. But people coming out scoring knots, ones.
Mm.
So where we going with that? If 10 men make one, sir, that's only 10 runs on the board, sir.
Yeah, I agree with you. Billy, you want to talk to a fellow Jamaican from St. James in Montego Bay? Say hello to Anton. He's a regular contributor to on our show. Billy.
Hello, hello, my fellow Jamaican. How are you? I'm impressed by your analysis.
I'm fine, you know. Thank you, sir. And how are you?
Billy's asking, how are you?
How are you?
Anton?
Pardon me?
He's asking how you are.
Oh, I'm good. And how is he?
He'll tell you in a minute. Billy, are you hearing Anton?
No, I'm not.
How come? Oh, okay. I don't know what's going on there. Anyhow, but he was making some interesting points about
the fact... We're not hearing at all, Andrew.
Okay.
A lot of the callers, we're not hearing them clearly.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there at all. All right, well, but Ken Husbands is a technical man, and...
I paid all the bills, Andrew.
All right. But
I paid all the bills.
But Anton, we're not hearing you very well, but you were making the point that the bowling is doing okay, but the batting certainly isn't.
Yes, sir. Also, yeah. Sir, why can't our batsmen play spin properly?
They don't at all. They don't play spin at all, properly at all. They don't play fast bowling well either, you know, especially when
yes,
it's aggressive.
Sir.
They don't play nothing. They don't play anything well at all.
Andrew,
yes,
I heard a very telling stat today. In the last 41 innings, West Indies has only passed 300 six times out of the last 41 innings. So that stat alone tells you, and 16 of those times we scored 150 or less. So it tells you the situation with our batting. But I have a question for Billy. Good evening, Billy. Good to hear from you.
Good evening.
I met you there in Florida a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Yes. And the question I have for you, as you were a director, the developmental part, how much focus has ever been placed in zeroing in on the development of our players from the ground up in all the territories? Because I would argue this now, our clubs was where our players were, our first class players were developed in the halcyon days. And I would say today the clubs are not fit for that purpose anymore. So it seems to me we have to come up with a different structure in which our players will be afforded that developmental, maybe something above the club level. I would say something a la the second 11, like what they have in England. So our players can continue to develop those tools that are necessary to play first class cricket. We'll even get into international, so that when they get to first class cricket, they have all the requisite tools. What are your thoughts on that? And the question in terms of the focus on development at the West Indies level.
Interesting observation. We have to look at it in a broader way. We have to address the notion of coaches. Even in America, we don't have sufficient coaches. We have PE teachers in our schools. Mm-hmm. Remember the history of cricket started out on the estates, sugar was king, and then we went into bauxite didn't do much for cricket, and well, some good facilities, but now we're coming out through the school system, and we have to go from the primary school level at least and build out on that with sufficient numbers that we can bring through the system at different levels of under 15, under 17, under 19, and go right up. When we did a gap analysis here some years ago, there's a big gap from under 19 to, say, 23. There was nothing there to really harness the skills and the talents of those kids. They come right up to either play for Jamaica or so on. So there was that gap that we tried to fill. But unless we get the junior programs right, and we try to roll out a junior program in each club and parish association here in Jamaica, but you know, some things don't catch on, and we are so accustomed to what used to happen then, and this culture
yes.
of than what we know, and we don't get outside of the box, and we don't do anything differently. Unless we change that mindset, unless we change that culture, unless we improve on our coaching staff, our pitches, and so on, we will struggle at this level. I believe the solution is not the greatest one. It's not rocket science. It's mm-hmm. just that we keep talking, but we're not doing what is necessary and what right. is required.
Right. I agree totally. Because what I was saying would encompass all of that. Because the youngsters, when they come out of school, they have to join a club. And if our clubs aren't doing what it used to do, they get lost away there. And even, and you would know this, and Philo and so on, clubs would have multiple division teams in one club. And yes. even within that one club, there was that competitive thing to get to the top team in the club. So you had to develop your skills just being within that microcosm, if you will.
Yes.
Andrew,
which isn't there today.
Precisely.
Andrew, that test match that West Indies lost, right? It's the fourth test match we've lost under Ross and TS within 3 days, huh?
Yep.
And the captain made a statement about finances and facilities. The facilities in today's West Indies region are better than years ago. I think the internal problem of West Indies cricket is the batting. The players don't take responsibility for their mistakes. You want to toss on a pitch that was very good for cricket, but you batted first and you got bowled 462. And you're telling me about finances and facilities. But yet you go there 10 days before, you just came out of CPL, but you came out of cricket. So where is the mental preparation and skill transfer? Shane McGill just came into the Asia Cup. He arrived Monday, the test match was Thursday. And look how he approached batting in that first innings and India batting. So it's nothing. I think that all West Indies players need to take internal look at themselves internally and sit down and tell themselves or ask themselves, am I doing what is right for my ability and what West Indies is doing, West Indies cricket is doing for me? Or am I shortchanging West Indies cricket and the game? And until they answer those hard questions, Andrew, we're going to continue to lose test matches. This is Ross St. Cheer's fourth test match feat in the test cycle. We have gone 4-0 in this 2025-2026 ICC test championship cycle. We have been beaten left, right, and center. And we are not hearing anything about the players being, the players feeling a little aggrieved or down because they have not performed. I think that when we look at, even in our bowling, Andrew, second new ball was due, and we allow our fast bowlers to persist with the old ball up to 90 something over. So
yeah, remember that?
Which is crazy. Mm-hmm. The new ball is due, give it to the bowlers and let them run in the bowl. I think we made a fundamental error too. We've lost two spearheads, and we brought a young man here, Johan Lea. Congratulations to him. But I would have given the game to Anderson Phillip. You have to go back to seniority. Mm-hmm. That man has played county cricket, yeah. That man has played test matches for you. Give the man the opportunity, saying that you've lost two of the experience. You want to start that series on a positive. You don't want to start that series with an inexperienced fast bowler. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Lane is not the real deal yet. Needs some work to be done. I'm going to be looking very closely at Ravi Rampal and see how he can fine-tune Lane. I know they're going to say they don't have enough time, but I want to see what Ravi Rampal has in him now. This is when you tell, the goats from the cows. That when you can see progress, mm-hmm. when you can see progress in our bowlers. I'm not happy with what I saw from Lane. I think that he's a little bit all over the shop. He needs to be streamlined a bit more. I get certain attributes going, and that's why I would have gone for the experienced Phillip, who's played county cricket at test match. That's the aid in Jaden Seeley. Because Jaden Seeley, you can't burn him out. From there, we go to Bangladesh and then to New Zealand. And we've lost two already. So if we lost a third, Andrew, they're going to call for you.
Yeah, I agree. In fact,
we need to plan our cricket better.
Yeah,
and that is where experience comes in. So I would like to tell Ross St. Cheer's, it's not about finance and facilities; it's about players' responsibility. We have two openers, and if you buy a snow cone in the hot sun before it melts, both of them give me a pavilion. They don't understand opening pairs and partnerships and structuring the opening system. Two openers on the first day of a test match, Andrew. Need to bat for the first hour. You're getting the water break now. Reassess and go to lunch without losing a wicket or even one. If you go to lunch at 70 before loss, you've done a good job. You come back in the mid afternoon and back again. You can't lose so many wickets in a bundle and then want your middle order to.
They were 90 for five.
Yeah, there's no structure. There's no structure to how we are planning our batting innings.
Yeah.
So don't come and tell me about finance and facilities. It's about personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. These are batters who have been selected by the sole selector, who's also the head coach, Mr. Haven. I'm praying about it. Mr. Haven, I can tell you, I was against it. Because one man can't play a band in two different parks in the world.
Mm-hmm. but perhaps we should ask Billy. Billy, what's your view on this all format? I mean, Darren Sammy is the all format coach. Do you support that?
I oppose that fundamentally. You cannot tell me that you can find all the skill set in one person for that person to be the all format coach. So we can't find anyone else in the Caribbean to play a different role. You can transfer the skills just like that up and down, depending on which format. Do you have the time? Mm-hmm. And we need to also get a better understanding of Mr. Sammy's qualification to be an international coach. You cannot have a primary school teacher lecturing at university, you know?
No, not at all, not at all. And Philip, you've spoken about that on several occasions, the lack of qualifications as far as Darren Sammy is concerned.
Yeah, but we were also told on this program by the former CEO that Darren Sammy is going to go and get cricket qualifications and accreditations. Now I read in a newspaper that the president said that there's no conflict of interest. He coaches CWI squads, and they say Lucia Kings is going to better equip him to be a coach. Mm. And I don't know how much planning has gone into this tour. This is a serious tour of India.
No, and Fuller, you're right about that, because I don't know of any other team that would have their, their head coach coaching. It's almost like asking the manager of the
international coach.
Of course.
When you leave the international arena, you leave as an international coach, and that's it. You don't come back down. So why would Sammy be our head coach at the international level?
Yeah.
He's coming down to the coach of CPL franchise. And not only coming down, Andrew, he's bringing all his majority back on staff.
Yeah.
And the analysts with him. So nobody else is getting an opportunity. Mm. But I'm hearing that it's okay to do that.
Billy?
Yeah. No qualifications, no upskilling of his skills.
No.
And but yeah, he's doing a fantastic job.
Billy?
And apart from the technical skills, Andrew, you have to be mindful of perceived or real conflicts of interest and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dynamics of the situation require you to behave and perform in a certain way. If not, you're going to send the wrong message. And I believe a big part of West Indies cricket, a big problem is that we continue to send the wrong message, and it is reaching the players. Mm-hmm. And I heard what Philo said about Mr. Chase. But apart from the statement, I believe he has been given a basket to carry water too.
Mm. I agree. And Billy, also, you guys split up the coaches after full review for good reason. And in short order, they go back on that decision.
Yeah. We had selectors. I can tell you that. We had that selectors. Too. Yeah.
Well, President Shallow believes that there's no conflict of interest in Darren Sammy coaching both the West Indies team and the Solutia Kings in the Republic Bank CPL. He's actually speaking to Newsday. Shallow addressed the issue, of course, at the quarterly meeting. Your response to that, Billy?
There's conflict of interest. I don't know how the president defines conflict of interest. But there is conflict of interest. Conflict of interest arise, and Philo would know, when there is reputational benefit or financial benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are significant factors. And when you look at that situation, you don't have to go too deep to know that there is a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only one. There are several other conflicts of interest in CWI.
Mm-hmm.
And unless those are addressed and dealt with in a professional way, we will continue to struggle. because we're getting in the way of each other.
Billy, are you disappointed with the stewardship of Dr. Shallow?
I had a lot of confidence in Dr. Shallow when I met him. When he joined the board, he joined the board after my time. But I think he is overwhelmed right now with where we are at. I think the situation is a matrix and it's very complex and requires that level of input. I also have a fundamental problem with Dr. Shallow seeking political office, parliamentary office, and still being the president of Cricket West Indies. The two things go hand in hand, and he should consider giving up one.
But expound on that, though, because there's a view that there's nothing wrong with it. Why do you have a problem with it?
Andrew, the Cricket West Indies is not a national body. It's a regional institution.
Right.
Representing the collective interest of multiple Caribbean nations.
Right.
And as such, I believe the president is expected to operate above partisan politics in whichever country, ensuring fair and impartial leadership for all member states, for all member territories. Dr. Shallow is not in a position to do that. But the matter goes beyond Dr. Shallow as an individual. It's about preserving the integrity of the game and the institutions that govern it. Cricket has historically served as a unifying force across the Caribbean, and it must not become a tool of political leverage. And I have a problem with Dr. Shallow serving.
Dr. Ford, you agree with Billy?
Well, I was only an administrative of a small sport, but usually politics and sport aren't mixed together. So it is a distraction. And you know, the trying to work on reviving a regional body like the West Indies, especially with the performances that we have, would require all of your energies and trying to work on other things. Unless you're a genius, that would be quite difficult. So from that standpoint, I believe that you have to commit to one thing that you believe in. Decide what's more important to you and just pursue it.
It's an interesting point you're making, Doc, because remember we had Dr. Ralph Gonzalez on this show a couple months ago, and he was very upset that St. Vincent were not getting any games, and Pakistan, and certainly with Australia, given the fact they've done so well in hosting Bangladesh. And you're going to have a challenge, of course. St. Vincent is a stakeholder in West Indies cricket. So you've got Dr. Shallow, who is in politics, he's running a seat in St. Vincent. How is he going to talk to the Prime Minister of St. Vincent? And St. Vincent is a stakeholder. So I do have a problem with that. And I certainly agree with you, Billy. I don't think it should happen. What do you think, Philo?
Well, Andrew, there's clearly a conflict of interest. But as I asked Billy, the directors of CWI seem not to have a problem with it. And I would like to know why. Because Dr. Shallow has pursued a career in politics. He's running for a seat in St. Vincent and the Grenadines in the next general election. I've seen clips where he wears his yellow shirt and he's on the political platform. Interest is there. How much interest does he have to give or time to give to CWI, who is now in a financial crisis?
Billy?
That's a conflict, Andrew, that I'm speaking about. Because what you describe with the Prime Minister of St. Vincent,
right,
it may not be real, you know, but it will be perceived that way, given all those things that are happening. You're running for parliamentary seat, you're the president of CWI. So not giving St. Vincent any game, whether it's real or not, it will be perceived as an attempt to undermine the administration.
Mm-hmm.
That is about that. We live in a real world.
Yeah, we do.
And that's a perception.
Just got another minute or so left on the show. Billy, I know that you are still very much involved in cricket at some level in Jamaica. Any interest of becoming president of the Jamaica Cricket Association again?
No, Andrew. No, not at this time. Has never crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I served the JCA for 11 years,
mm-hmm,
as president, and we made some gains. We made a lot of gains in governance. We made a lot of gains in the financials. We won a few titles. Well, I understand my successors, they have not won any yet, but be that as it may, maybe around the corner, I don't know. But, you know, I my life goes in phases and stages, and I'm moving on now to another stage.
Billy, when last have you spoken to Dr. Bennett?
It's been a while. They okay. A reason to have a conversation. We greeted each other the other day at Savannah Park at the launch of the scoreboard, and so on. So we are civil, and we respect each other, and we communicate when it's necessary.
Right. Well, Billy, it's been an absolute pleasure. You were to come on this show quite a long time ago, but it was really refreshing to have you on the show, making some interesting comments. And of course, you're very insightful. You know your thing. You've been around for a long time, and we wish you well going forward, Billy.
Thanks, Andrew, and to all the your panelists. You have always listened to you sometimes on TVJ the following day or so on and thing, you know. So I am abreast with some of the developments, and, you know, I'm around.
All right. Thanks to Billy Haven, former president of the Jamaica Cricket Association, former director of Cricket West Indies. It was really a pleasure having you. Thanks to you, Dr. Ford. Thanks to my very good friend, Basil Butcher Jr. And, of course, Philo Wallace, who has no intentions of running anywhere in Barbados. I understand he may want to run in St. Philip North, but that has already been taken. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.